Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to a variety of different topics in the next hour, plus your phone calls. The mock draft by Mel Kiper, the first one, the first version, was released today. We have a story up on Giants.com. Who went number one? Who went number two? We'll get into that. Latest on the coaching front, and you've got the NFL playoffs resuming this weekend, so we'll look ahead to the AFC Championship game as well as the NFC Championship game. Paul, let's start with Mel Kiper's mock draft. And Cleveland, he has Josh Allen, the Wyoming quarterback, going number one to the Browns. And then number two, he has Josh Rosen, UCLA's quarterback, going to the Giants. So he has two quarterbacks being taken in the first two picks, Allen to the Browns and Rosen to the Giants.
You know, Allen's got the most pro-likable skill set of any of the quarterbacks in this draft. So I'm not surprised that he's got him moving up on the board. But, you know, here we are.
Oh, yes. We're very early in the game.
mock draft number one of 573.
Indeed.
I mean, at what point are these guys going to do four mock drafts a day instead of just one a day? It's going to wind up being like four
a day. As we get nearer to the draft, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, so whatever. Simply put, I understand why, because of the Josh Allen skill set, he's moving him up. I suspect Allen's going to get a lot more pub and a lot more push at the combine because he does have the best skill set. But, of course, there are a lot of intangibles that go into this. And one of those intangibles is mental makeup, poise, ability to read defenses, and all of those kinds of things, which, on the negative side, he does not appear to be as adept at as a couple of the other guys.
Yeah.
Now, health-wise, though, he's in better shape.
Correct. Rosen's more of a question mark from a health perspective.
Correct.
Yes.
Again.
The pros and cons.
Do I need to say not everybody checks all the boxes?
Yes. No, you're 100% right. And like you said, I mean, clearly this conversation is going to evolve and change day to day, week to week, as we near the combine and we get closer and closer to the draft. But the only reason why I brought it up today is, number one, there is an article up on Giants.com. Dan Salamone outlined what Mel Kiper's choices were. And it's just always interesting, I think, to see the first one, what direction the so-called experts are going in. So it seems as if in the early stages right now, Paul, the movement is towards the quarterback as opposed to another position like an offensive lineman or a running back.
My feeling, I don't even want to think about mock drafts until after the combine is over.
I'm with you.
Is that fair?
No disagreement.
Thank you.
So let's get back now to a more relevant football topic.
Yes.
The Giants are not in the conference championship games, but we are closing in on what is arguably one of the most exciting weekends in the National Football League, and you have Vikings-Eagles, and you have Patriots-Jaguars. Tom Brady supposedly jammed his throwing hand the other day. Seems to be okay. I know the media likes to make sometimes more out of nothing, but I think these are intriguing matchups, Paul, when you look at the fact that all four of these teams are in the top five in scoring defense over the course of the regular season, and all four of them are top 10 scoring offense. A lot of similarities across the board. I'm not talking about, you know, the names of the quarterbacks and the hype surrounding the quarterbacks, but outside of the name brand quarterbacks, you've got a lot of similarities in terms of strengths of these defenses, strong front sevens, the ability to run the football, offensive line play. It's no surprise that all four of these teams got this far.
Balanced attack.
Yeah.
You know, specifically when you talk about being able to run the football, it allows you to be balanced. And this is one of the things that the Giants have hoped to have for many years and unfortunately have been able to do so, and it's one of the reasons why the Giants have not been a playoff team very frequently in the last half a dozen years. John and I discussed this yesterday about what are the similarities between these teams who are still alive, well, in the postseason or even got to the postseason. One of the things that's common about the four teams, and if you didn't hear the show yesterday, I'm going to make this point again. Each of these four teams can be chameleons on offense. Not only do they have strong defenses, not only do they have balanced attacks on offense, but each of these teams have made significant adjustments along the way. Belichick adjusts week to week because that's what he does with the Patriots. They certainly are a team of a million faces. But look at what the Jaguars have done this year by adding Fournette, and the power run game. They have decided, you know what? We can run the ball more. We can bully you up front. We can even have Bortles run the ball more than he passes the ball on occasion if we have to.
Trap it to the playoffs.
To find a way to win. That's really admirable of them to be able to do that. Look at the Vikings. Gone through three quarterbacks in the last year. Gone through how many running backs?
Dalvin Cook, Latavius Murray, Jerick McKinnon.
You know, and no one knew even during the offseason if Peterson was going to come back or not. And, of course, he didn't. So, and how they've been able to do it. Well, guess what? They were number two in rushing attempts this year in the NFL, number seven in rushing yardage, despite going through a plethora of running backs.
Yeah, it says a lot about the depth of the team, too.
Okay, and then let's go to the other team, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Pittsburgh's out.
New England.
Yeah. New England's also.
We've already talked about New England.
I mean,
Philadelphia.
I'm thinking the Eagles.
Thinking Pennsylvania.
Well, you had the right state. Wrong team. Yeah.
I'm out of it now. Yes, I'm thinking Pennsylvania. Philadelphia. Look what they did. Carson Wentz goes out of the lineup. Doug Peterson says, okay, we're going to make adjustments. We're going to have less rollouts, less read option. We're going to go a little bit more on the running game early to set up the play action pass because that's something that Nick Foles does really well. Worked to perfection last week. Every single one of these teams was able to adapt and be chameleon-like as they made their way to this point in the season. And I think that is extremely significant.
I would agree. Also, Philadelphia, to your point, has also gone through a variety of different running backs too, Paul. Remember, Jay Ajayi, they acquired midway through the season. They started off with LeGarrette Blunt. Darren Sproles got hurt.
Yes.
I mean, that's another example of
against
a team.
The Giants.
Correct.
Sproles
that just
hurt.
Made modifications. Guys bought into the system, and they had success. And that also goes back to, I think, the bigger point, Paul, and this relates to the Giants, you know, the importance of the depth chart. And I know we've had these conversations on multiple occasions here on the program, and granted, the Giants suffered injuries to a significant degree this season, unlike other seasons. But when you lose your starters, to simply make the argument in the National Football League that once your starters go down, there are no opportunities for you to regroup, I think is a myth. That's a fake narrative because we've seen a lot of teams. Case in point, a number of teams that are now going to be taking part in the conference championship games that have lost starters, yet because of who they went out and drafted or because who they've signed at free agency, are still in a position to thrive. You mentioned the Vikings. The quarterbacks and the running backs that they've gone through, most teams would not be able to survive that, Paul, under those circumstances. You take into consideration the Eagles, a similar narrative. You lose your starting running back. You lose your starting quarterback. You lose your starting left tackle. Jason Peters goes down. Eagles still found a way to overcome that. New England's also dealing with injuries at a consistent rate. And then Jacksonville, probably of the four teams, has stayed in good health compared to everybody else. But with that being said, Fournette's been in and out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. And even when Fournette's been out of the lineup, I would argue, Paul, Chris Ivory has stepped in. Some of these other players have filled the role that just because Fournette's not there, it doesn't mean that they can't run the football. Plus, it shouldn't be dismissed that Cam Robinson, their rookie offensive lineman, has had a very productive season, which I think has helped the cause of the O-line too. So a lot of different factors I think are consistent across the board with all four of these teams, and that's why it's no coincidence that these are the four representatives getting ready to play in the Super Bowl. To me, it's going to be interesting how different both of these games finish up, and the reason why I bring that up, Paul, is because you got one game, obviously, outside in Foxborough, and an interesting trend that I just looked up, last three games that have been played in Foxborough at the AFC Championship game level have been decided by an average of 24 points. They have not been not been close games. No, well, you chuckle, but here's the thing. One of those was actually a Patriots loss to the Ravens, if you recall, when they lost by 15 points to Baltimore.
Yes.
So it's not so much that it's going to favor New England. It's just the fact that those games are not close when they have the AFC Championship game in Foxborough. NFC, we've had a lot of close affairs over the last few years, a little bit different of a storyline, especially a few games that have gone to overtime. I mean, I would lean towards this New England game being decided by a significant margin compared to what I think we're going to see with Philadelphia and Minnesota.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, of course, you know, there are teams that are sitting outside the whole playoff race right now saying, well, we beat a couple of these teams during the season. We played these teams close during the season. So what does that tell you about the difference between these teams that are now in the Final Four and some of the teams that are not at all? I mean, wasn't it true that the 49ers beat Tennessee And did they beat Tennessee and did they beat Jacksonville?
They beat Jacksonville. I know that for a fact. Let me look up if they beat Tennessee. I don't remember that off the top of my head. They beat Jacksonville late in the season. I remember when Jimmy Garoppolo had a very productive year.
And the Giants, of course, gave the Eagles all kinds of fits. So it's pretty funny how you talk about teams that were, you know, at the bottom in the basement of the heap, compare themselves to teams that are now in the Final Four, and it's like,
well, but that
really?
Goes back to our favorite term. Well, you use a different term than I do. Isn't that more of a reflection of?
Please, come on, well, come on. And but you got to pay me $10 for using it.
Well, that's why I'm going to let you say it.
The
then.
Quicksand of mediocrity, folks.
That to me, it's more of a reflection, Paul, what you're talking about. And San Francisco did beat Tennessee and Jacksonville back-to-back weeks.
Okay, which is why. Okay, after the three-win Jaguars this year now find themselves playing this weekend, you have to believe when John Mara says we can be a good team in 2018, you have to believe that he believes it too.
Well, I think everybody in the NFL believes that for the most part, maybe with the exception of the Cleveland Browns. I mean, everybody, for the most part, in fairness, Paul, has been able to turn things around. It's not unheard of, so I don't think that's a stretch. But you also need to look at why are these teams turning around, Paul. That's the most important fact, and that's a bigger factor to take into consideration more so than, okay, well, it tends to happen often. Well, how do teams turn around quickly? Sometimes it's simply they have one very good draft. Sometimes it's a matter of they're very aggressive in free agency and the guys they sign give them instantaneous results. Case in point, we saw that with the Giants 2 years ago
when
they turned their defense around. Other times it's also they protect the football better than they did the previous year. I think I've seen that a lot. So there's a variety of ways. Well-disciplined football.
You know, so many different things. Ironically, with the Jaguars, they're doing it without what's known as a franchise quarterback. They turned around a three-win season into the AFC Championship game without what most people would consider is a star QB.
Well, I think you could say you got three teams. Three of the four teams do not have what you would consider a star quarterback.
Minnesota not coming from a three-win season, though. At least they were .500 last year, although they went in the tank the second half of the year when their offensive line
crumbled. Yeah, they finished up 8-8 after a 5-0 start.
Right, but they didn't have as far to go.
Okay, fair enough. What about Philly? Philly, though, had a year where they had a relatively nice turnaround. Rookie quarterback.
We could call Wentz a star quarterback.
I'm looking at the quarterbacks that are actually suiting up this weekend. And I think Nick Foles,
gotcha.
Case Keenum, and Blake Bortles.
Well, Wentz had a lot to do with getting them here.
No, Wentz certainly did, but Nick Foles still goes out and helps you beat Atlanta.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Got to give him credit for that.
Because of Peterson's adjustments.
Correct.
Great job by the
utilizing the running backs and also the defense getting the job done and containing Matt Ryan and company.
No doubt.
So the bigger point is
Atlanta helped them out, though, with some horrible places.
Well, they did, but you know what?
And doesn't that happen to, I mean, look, I said this 1,000 times, the golden age of football in the 70s and 80s. You had your Ditkas and your Johnsons and your Parcellses and your Gibbs and your Walshes. Think about all the great coaches that were in the NFL in those days. Even Denny Green was a terrific coach. Look at his one-loss record.
Yeah.
Okay? Now look at what you got. How many questionable play selections were made over the course of the last 2 weeks in the playoffs where, I grant you, the winning teams made plays above the X's and the O's, came through in the clutch, had balls bounce their way, okay, but at the same time, the losing team had opportunities had they been in the best positions to win the game to do something. And I don't think their coaches put them in the best positions to
win
the
games.
That's
fair. I mean, listen, you can always question play calling.
I mean, Andy Reid's been screwing that up for years.
In terms of passing more in the second half when you probably should have run, especially if you're up 21-3. I'm not going to disagree with you from that standpoint. I think, though, you could say that as a generic thing for just about every game. What I will say, though, is, and this is a big part of the conversation, when you don't know how much leeway the veteran quarterback has, and we talk about a lot of that with respect to Eli Manning and the Giants, before you point the finger at the play caller, you also need to know, as part of the conversation, how many times is the quarterback assessing the defense, Paul, and saying, you know what, I'm going to get now opt out of that play, and we're going to go a different route.
John and I spent 20 minutes on this particular subject yesterday about how you can't just point the blame at one guy. because the coordinator is affected by what the coach wants him to do.
Correct.
Then you got the quarterback who has the opportunity to audible or doesn't have the opportunity to audible. You got the game plan. You got the foundation of it. You got the options. You got what defense was the other team in, which made you go to the right call, but of course it failed, and now it's easy to criticize the call, but the defense was in a formation that dictated you made the switch. There are a billion things there, so I don't want to oversimplify it. But I would say that philosophically speaking, there were certainly a lot of questions for losing head coaches to answer over the last 2 weeks. Let's just put it that way.
Game management, some of those other things.
From a big picture perspective.
And that's fine. I don't disagree with you there. One thing I just wanted to bring up related to what we were talking about earlier, just to bring it back full circle to the Giants, and then we'll open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. The point about the quarterback, Paul,
yeah,
and the fact that we were talking about, okay, if you don't have a star quarterback, you can still win in this league. If you do the right things to complement the quarterback, your defense plays well. The reason why I want to bring that up is because we've had a lot of debates on this show, and I'm sure we're going to have more of them today, about where the Giants should go with the number two pick and whether or not the priority should be quarterback.
Because actually, it's good you and I are doing the show because there is no debate. We both think they should trade it.
Well, I think that there's a great deal of value in trading it. Would I be surprised?
If this were John, we'd be arguing for an hour.
Well, yeah, I think John sees it that way, too, in fairness, because when John and I were on earlier in the week, we were having a conversation back and forth.
He's finally starting to melt to the other side.
Everybody
smartens up once in a while.
No, but I would also, in fairness, though, I just want to clarify, I see the value in taking a quarterback at number two, too. It's not like I'm blind to that. It's just that I'm also open-minded that you can easily make arguments to trading it, to going in a different direction if you wanted with another position as well. But I want to focus on quarterback here for a second. Everybody is enamored with finding the elite quarterback, the franchise quarterback, right?
Okay.
Well, how many times do we have conversations related to that? And
sure,
what we saw this postseason, now granted it may be rare, I get it, but I don't want people to dismiss the fact that if you have your house in order in other areas of your team and your identity of your team allows the running game to flourish, the offensive line is strong, the defense is opportunistic, you don't necessarily need Aaron Rodgers behind your offensive line in order to get to a conference championship game and have postseason success. That's the bigger point here. So that means that if you like the group of quarterbacks as a whole in this year's draft, okay? Let's look at the big picture perspective here, Paul. There's a lot of quarterbacks in this year's class. If you like a lot of them and you don't see a huge disparity between the guy that's projected to go one or two, and then maybe somebody that you could take, I don't know, with the 15th overall pick. Those are the things you have to then consider and not listen to the court of public opinion. Oh, well, if we don't take the quarterback at number two, there's no way that the kid's going to pan out and we're not going to have a prospect to develop and groom. Whereas maybe you could say, hey, if we move down and at 15 we take a quarterback who we're just as excited about, there's no reason to think that you can't have the same amount of success with that 15th overall pick.
Well,
that's my point.
You know, the counter to that would be that Bortles was a number three overall, and somebody would argue with you and say, well, look how high the guy was picked. You would argue.
Took a few years, though, for them to provide him.
And you and I would both argue that he is not a superstar quarterback.
No, not at all.
We would argue that, and look at where the team has gotten without a superstar quarterback. Look at how Case Keenum, I don't want to say journeyman, but
he's a regular guy. We
could argue that, okay?
But the talent that the Vikings provided him versus the Rams
is
apples and oranges.
But those on the other side of the fence who insist that you have to draft a quarterback high will tell you that Wentz was a high pick.
Of course.
Bortles was a high pick.
Okay.
We will throw back, Brady was a sixth rounder. Keenum was a non-draftable.
Kirk Cousins.
Okay.
Third round,
So the truth is, there is stock on both sides of that fence.
Absolutely.
And, you know, no one's going to win that in a landslide argument. But the fact is that both sides have evidence to support their side of the deal, which means neither of us can say that the other people are totally wrong.
No, well, listen, it's a matter of opinion. I mean, there really is no right or wrong answer. It's agreeing or disagreeing with opinions. It's not right or wrong because we don't have any factual evidence to predict what's going to happen
However,
in the future.
You do know that 15 Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks were not drafted in the first round, and we are going into Super Bowl 52,
that is
I
correct.
Believe.
Yes, we are.
So I'm not talking about how many winning quarterbacks there have been because guys have won multiples. We understand that. But I do know that 15 Super Bowl champion quarterbacks were not first-round picks.
Which says a lot.
It's enough of a sample size to say that you don't have to have one. I mean, we're not talking 90% now, okay? 15 of them were not. Now, if you take all the multiple guys out of it, again, I don't know what it turns out to be, but just 15 out of 52 is enough of a sample size that says, you know what? It's real possible you don't need to get that number one guy.
Yeah, and that's why the reason why I'm bringing up this topic is not so much about the quarterback. It's about the elements around the quarterback. That no matter who is your quarterback, if you don't provide them with the necessary support, it's going to be a rough season. And I think we saw that with the Giants, not just this season and previous years with what Eli Manning has had to deal with. But I think then you look on the flip side, what Nick Foles, what Case Keenum, what Blake Bortles have been able to accomplish as a result of saying, hey, you know what? I've got a defense that takes some pressure off of me. I've got a running game that could do some of the heavy lifting. I don't necessarily have to press the envelope and throw 50-yard bombs down the field all the time to win football games. That's my point in bringing this subject up. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. Let's open up the phone lines. We've got Mike on Long Island. Mike, you get us started. What's happening?
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Hello.
Hello, Mike. What do you got for us?
Okay, I got three actual questions. One happens to do with the draftable quarterbacks. The other one is the center. I want to talk about the Giants center. And then I want to talk about the injured reserve. First, I'm going to ask you my last question first. The injured reserve, you got a guy like Dunkelman, the lineman that was an undrafted free agent. You know, I read some good things about him. But my question is this. When these guys are on injured reserve, obviously they're not playing, but are they able to bulk up? Are they in the gym with the rest of the Giants? Are they working out?
They cannot practice. That is the only restriction. Yeah. They cannot practice. But they can go through all of the training and rehab stuff that is necessary to get them healthy again.
And does that rehab stuff include weightlifting and et cetera?
Sure. Well, strength and conditioning is part of rehab.
Okay. All right. Next question is there's more than three draftable quarterbacks. I want to ask you guys, which one to you was the most impressive last year?
You're talking about throughout the collegiate season?
No, I'm talking about the draftable quarterbacks. One's coming out this year.
Yeah, so you're talking about the guys who just finished up their college seasons, who was the most impressive to us?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I've said this multiple times. I was most impressed by Baker Mayfield. I thought he had a really good, productive season with Oklahoma. I think he's a dynamic quarterback. He's mobile. I understand that there's question marks about his sideline antics and his maturity, but he was the one, by watching a number of collegiate games, which I did follow throughout the season, I would say I was most impressed with him.
And I would repeat that Josh Allen, I think, has the most pro-ready skill set of any of the QBs. It's a little bit of an apples and oranges question because what he's looking at is not what I'm looking
at. Correct, exactly.
And vice versa.
And I'm also telling you in terms of watching just the game who jumped out to me.
Right.
If you were then to ask me, well, if I watch them work out and who's throwing the football down the field most impressively compared to the rest of the group, my opinion may change. But if you just ask based on play and games during the season, my answer would stick with Baker Mayfield.
Okay, so, I actually agree with you. I think Baker Mayfield was the most dynamic. And Paul, going back to the old days, I'm an older fellow like you. I'm 66. It reminds me of Fran Tarkenton. Okay, and that trade for Fran Tarkenton, in my opinion, was a disaster. Okay, we got nobody, and we lost a Hall of Fame quarterback. Now,
wait a second. You know, in that trade with Minnesota, when they sent Tarkenton back to the Vikings, one of the draft picks they got in that trade was used for Brad Van Pelt, a 5-time Pro Bowl linebacker.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Okay, so maybe that trade wasn't so bad. And Norm Snead did make the Pro Bowl in 1972 when the Giants went 8-6 because he led the NFC in passing.
Okay, but I will say this. The Giants got Norm Snead, right, who was a pretty good quarterback but wasn't able to move.
He was done. He had 1 year left, and 72 was the last year he was any good, and then after that he was shot.
Okay, and then we got a receiver named Bob Grimm, right?
Correct.
Okay, you know, what happened to him? I don't think he even played 1 year with the Giants. Right?
He was with them a couple of years. He wasn't really much to speak of. The whole key to that trade for the Giants was the draft pick they used for Brad Van Pelt.
Okay.
That was the whole key to that trade.
Okay, so now what I wanted to say about Baker Mayfield, I'm thinking, you know, a lot like you guys, I think if we could trade back and sort of like have our cake and eat it too. You know, I don't think Baker Mayfield is going to be a number one or a number two pick. He might be a number four or a five or a six pick. So I think we could move back and probably get him. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that's a realistic option right now. A lot depends on how he performs in the Senior Bowl, what he does during the combine. Remember, stocks can drop and raise very quickly. So right now, I would agree with you. I think it's reasonable to think that Baker Mayfield could go maybe middle of the first round as it stands right now. I don't know, though. 3 weeks from now, right, at the end of the day, Mike, we may be talking about him being a top 10 pick or a top right. five pick.
See,
changes very quickly.
I wouldn't touch him with a 50,000-foot pole because Davis Webb is here, and I believe in Davis Webb. And I think when you look at the maturity factor and the studious quarterback that Davis Webb is and what he's learned from Eli, and the fact is that he really is a lot like Eli, to me, taking a wild card guy like Mayfield, and I don't want to say he's Johnny Manziel, but when Johnny Football was coming out of Texas A&M, I was one who said, do not touch this guy. He will not work out in the NFL. He is a bomb waiting to explode. I did not trust anything about him. I thought he was a reckless player. I thought he was too much of a gunslinger. And, of course, all the off-the-field stuff. And any NFL team that even thought about putting him on their board, I thought was making a mistake. Now,
right.
I'm not telling you that Mayfield's the same player. Johnny Manziel's got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Now, Mayfield does kind of, in my mind, does fit some of that category. To me, I want no part of that.
Well, but this is what I'll add to what Paul just said. The difference, though, between Manziel and Mayfield is Manziel, there were a lot of question marks, Paul, about his dedication to football in addition to the off-the-field
issues.
Again,
I said it.
No, I know you said
different.
But I want to emphasize that because that, to me, is a major difference. With Mayfield, you don't see many questioning his desire to play football. Okay,
right.
He was voted in as a captain by his teammates. I know he was stripped of that because of what happened on the sidelines. I get that. But the respect that his teammates have shown him, the desire for him to win, go out and play hard. Remember, he walked on at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. He walked up to Bob Stoops when Bob Stoops was still the coach at that time and tried to fight his way onto the team. I'm seeing a lot of differences compared to Manziel and his track in terms of getting to Texas A&M and what he did there.
I will give you a particular point that has to be evaluated, and there's no way to concretely say that either one of us are right or wrong on this. But when you evaluate a college player who has been dynamic, exciting, a superstar electric type of talent, who has made a lot of plays on his own, you have to say to yourself, okay, that was against NCAA competition. Now he's going up to the NFL where things are more structured, where the players are bigger, faster, smarter. They will disguise defenses. How is that, I don't want to say instinctiveness and improvisation, going to translate against the real big boys?
Of course.
And in many instances, it's those players who look like they're dynamic in college who can't succeed in the pros because now you can't get away with half of the stuff that they did when they were in the college program.
Well, I think you got to consider that for every single quarterback.
And
I don't think one guy in particular is an exception to that.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But any time that you have a player who has relied heavily on pure athleticism, instinctiveness, improv, any time that a player heavily relies on that, that question becomes monumental. Because now his skill set is less of a grading point as opposed to the other stuff that he's done.
Well, guys, just let me interrupt here for a second. When I look at the Seattle's quarterback,
Russell Wilson, yeah.
Okay, Wilson is exactly like that.
They have been compared to one another, actually. Mayfield and Wilson, there's been a lot of comparisons between both of them.
You know, when stuff's breaking down and you could run out of the pocket and throw the ball, I mean, that's a big advantage.
Of course, okay? To extend plays.
Not always. It's not always a big advantage.
The Giants center, Rich Berg. Paul, I'm like you. Even though the Giants are losing or whatever, I'm looking at the offensive line to see what the heck we got there. And when I look at Richburg, I look at a guy who's a good player. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to put him down this much. But I see him getting knocked back into the backfield like he's a toy, like he's a rag doll sometimes, okay? I don't think he's a guy that we want to sign. On the move, I think he's fine, okay, when he's pulling or whatever. But if he has to hold his own, okay, he's just not the man for the job. He's too light. He's too small. And I think the guy that's replacing him is actually better than him.
Brett Jones, you're talking about?
Yep.
From Canada. Well, listen, Mike, we're going to let you go on that note and appreciate the phone call. Got to see what Dave Gettleman thinks about Richburg versus Brett Jones. I mean, that's a big part of this conversation in terms of where they're going to move forward. I would agree with Mike, Paul. I think...
Well, remember, Brett Jones is under a much different financial structure, too.
So that's one factor.
Which is a big deal.
Well, and here's the other thing, though. Brett Jones is a small guy, too. Brett Jones is not the biggest...
Pound for pound, one of the strongest guys on this team.
Well, but that makes up for it. But what I'm saying is, just from pure looking at him, Brett Jones is not a towering center compared to some other NFL offensive linemen. With that being said, though, I agree with you. He plays much bigger than his height, and it was impressive to see what he was able to do in place of Weston Richburg. He played the majority of the season. Remember, he also got a lot of playing time the previous season when Justin Pugh had gone down and missed a stretch. He played guard. He played center. So you've got pretty much two seasons of Brett Jones to evaluate on tape to determine, are we content with him? Do we want to go outside the organization, or do we want to bring back Richburg?
No, no question. It's a decision that the coaching staff, in addition to Gettleman, are going to have to decide on. I think that Brett Jones has proven he's an NFL-caliber center, though. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Any questions people had when he came down from Canada have been answered. In reference to Russell Wilson, I still believe he's a system quarterback. And unless you're operating with certain conditions, he will not be nearly as effective as he has been in Seattle. They have set up that team for him perfectly well. He's gotten better to come out of that heavy improv stuff in the last year or two.
He has to, because they really didn't have much of a running game
this
season.
Guess what? His good buddy Marshawn Lynch, beast mode, that was the end of him. And you saw he struggled. Wilson struggled for a while in terms of getting that offense to be as effective. And then he had to kind of learn, guess what? I can't be that wild and crazy guy that I was before. I got to change it a little bit. I give him credit.
He had a really good season, Wilson.
Better than I thought he was going to be. He has certainly broken that mold a little bit from being an RG3 kind of quarterback into becoming a little bit more of a conventional. And I give him credit for that. He turned out to be a little bit better than I thought he was going to be.
Well, you know what? They're not dangerous, these mobile quarterbacks, Paul, in my opinion, if they have
are, if you
good,
want to keep them healthy.
Well, they're not dangerous, I guess, what my next point was going to be, if they have the decision-making power and the discipline to say, even though I've got no options, I could take a sack or I can maybe try to run out of bounds or something like that. Because, see, what RG3's issue, Paul, what I would argue is he tried to go the extra mile.
No question.
By going the extra mile, it came back to bite him because he exposed himself to injury by taking those significant hits in the middle of the field. Russell Wilson is not that type of quarterback. I think Wilson has learned from what has come back to bite these other QBs.
He's gotten better.
His discipline, his decision-making stands out to me much more.
I would agree with that. And by the way, someone would throw Carson Wentz in my face and say, well, look at how he's been able to run. I liken him to more of a John Elway kind of guy.
He's a bigger quarterback.
Stronger quarterback, and yeah, he'll tuck it down and run when he has to, and will go for that first down. He's not just going to run to the sideline either.
Yeah.
He reminds me in that regard a lot more like Elway was.
Well, I thought you'd maybe throw in Cam, too, because he's built like a Cam.
I'm not a Cam Newton fan.
Well, maybe that's why you didn't show it, but I'm looking more at physical stature. I'm not looking
Understood.
At style of play. To me, he's built like Cam, who, you could make an argument, could be a linebacker just because of his physique. But Carson's going to have to learn, Paul, that he's also going to have to tail it back a little bit in light of this ACL injury, that you can't run for 10 yards every time the play breaks down.
No, that's true. I do want to throw out one other thing. The guy was mentioning to us about trading down. Yeah, you want to trade down into the – I think you want to go down somewhere into the top 12. 11 right now is the sweet spot for me, which I believe is the Miami Dolphins. That's my sweet spot to make a move. And if I move down there and get my boatload of picks – I'm taking one of the offensive tackles. okay? We mentioned yesterday with John, there's Williams, there's McGlinchey, and there's Zeus Jr. Brown. There's also Rankin, who I left off the board as another one of the first round. There were four first-round offensive tackles in this draft that everybody believes are legit. That's what I would do. I would go down to maybe 11 with the Dolphins. You know, they're going to want a quarterback. Cutler, who knows? Tannehill.
Yeah, Tannehill.
I think they've had enough of him.
I think it depends on how he recovers from the injury. I don't know if they're necessarily going to move on from him.
Because the other team that you'd want to think about is Denver at 5. Denver's going to need a quarterback. Now, are they going free agency?
I think they're going to go. Knowing John Elway's track record, I think he's going to pursue like an Alex Smith or try to pull off a trade. That would be my gut feeling if you were to ask me.
If they don't get one in March, maybe you deal with
then
Denver.
Then they may re-enter the conversation.
But there are four first-round offensive tackles in this draft. And, you know, for me, if the Giants can move down and get that shopping cart load of picks and get one of those tackles – that's the no-brainer for me.
Arizona's at 15, if you're going to go with that narrative. But I guess to you, you feel that's too low.
You know what? You could probably get one of those tackles at 15.
I think you can.
The question is, again, is Arizona, are they one of those teams that's looking for free agency? Or are they looking to make a trade?
I think they're sort of more in the middle ground compared to Denver.
I agree.
Just because we really haven't seen them in a position where Steve Keim, their general manager, Carson Palmer's been there for the last few years, and then they relied on Drew Stanton, who had a history with Bruce Arians based on his days with the Colts and prior to that. So they're a little bit harder to read, I think, than maybe what John Elway is going to do. And here's the other thing I would argue. If you go down to 15, I still think, depending on how the quarterbacks play out, you may be able to grab a quarterback that you like, too. I would not rule that out either, Paul, if you move down to 15. I mean, it depends on Gettleman's evaluations.
At that point in the round, I'm taking the blue-chip tackle.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, listen, Patrick Mahomes was taken in the teens last year's draft. Now,
you know how I feel
small
about
sample size.
You know how I feel about taking a quarterback.
No, I know where you stand, but what I'm saying is that the reason I bring that up still is if you're moving down from 2 to 15, let's say hypothetically, you could still then reap the benefits of both worlds because you probably would have gotten an additional pick or two. You could still get the quarterback, and then maybe you get an additional first-rounder or you get an additional second-rounder or something like that.
By the way, this brings up a topic Lance and I talked about at lunch the other day. Over the Cap, which you know is one of the really good football business websites that talks about the business of the contracts and so forth, they're estimating the Giants will get a fourth-round compensatory pick, primarily because of Jonathan Hankins going to the Colts.
We had a major conversation
about that.
Well,
we were trying to figure it out.
Correct.
As everybody knows, it's a mysterious formula that nobody seems to have.
But there are a lot of factors that are taken into consideration that we know.
So that's good. A fourth-round compensatory would be really good for the Giants because there are supposedly four rounds worth of solid offensive line prospects in this draft. Now, they've got a 1, 2, or 3, and then if they get 2 4s, that means they get 5 picks in the first 4 rounds.
And
you got to take 2 offensive linemen in those first 5 picks.
Well, and if you look at Gettleman's track record with Carolina,
he has taken
offensive linemen in those
rounds.
And
defensive line.
Yeah, but offensive linemen who have actually panned out.
He has never taken an offensive or defensive lineman in his 4-plus years with Carolina, did not take a lineman lower than the 4th round. They were all first, second, third, or fourth because he wanted guys who he really believed were going to be players. He wasn't taking flyers in the 5th, 6th, or 7th round. No, no. Trenches, you're going for guys who have, as John said, a higher floor because you know they're make-it players.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when you evaluate draft picks, you always want the higher floor because the ceiling to me is the bonus. If you screw up on the floor, Paul, you're not recovering.
From
the floor. So you always need to make sure that the floor is stable. Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Steve in New York. Steve, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Steve. What's happening?
So I got a statement I want to make. It's kind of going to tie into my question a little bit. One of the things that gets overlooked about this year's draft that we're going to be going into is our position in it. Now, it's like I think people lose focus on how, even though we know how important the second overall pick in the draft is, what it would cost a team to get to where we are right now shows you the value of the pick that we're going to be at. And I want to say that I'm kind of excited because Paul, and you're going to agree with this. I know you will, Paul. We finally got a GM who understands about the defense and offensive line. It's about time we got a guy who is going to be aggressive in the offensive line and defensive lines because it's been way too long that that's been neglected. And I haven't seen him do anything yet, but from his interviews and everything, it seems like he's a sure win for picking up some good guys on some big boys on our lines, and I'm excited about that.
He likes the hog mollies.
I couldn't be more happier when I heard him say it, and I was like, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah.
And to me, when I look at draft picks, guys, I kind of look at it, I think this gets lost in it, is what you may have a first-round pick, a second-round pick, but where were you picking in the first and second round? Were you the 32nd team or were you the first? Because that carries over into the second and the third. Like, we're not only getting the second overall pick, we're getting the second overall pick in the second.
Yes.
The second overall pick.
Absolutely.
The third, yeah. And so I look at them as tiers. Like, okay, you were picked in the second round, but you were picked the 32nd player in the second round. So really, you're the 64th player in the out of college.
Well, it's kind of like people say Landon Collins was a fringe first-round pick because the Giants went up to the top of the second round to get him.
And look what we got out of him. You know,
yeah.
The value of
exactly.
The second-round pick. And I can only go by Dave Gettleman's interviews, but I couldn't feel any more confident going in with this type of a pick. This is franchise-altering type of a pick. No matter what you do with it, you could set your franchise up for the next 10, 15 years. And you could screw it up, too, because we see the Browns.
Yeah.
Well, it's an inexact science. Anybody could screw it up.
You know what, my friend? So, honest to goodness, though, Dave Gettleman, if he is going to build the trenches or rebuild them is the more appropriate word here, he's going to have to also do it through free agency because you're not going to be able to get everything that you need in the draft. Come March – and when free agency opens, that second week of March, what's it, the 14th, I think, is when the new begins. He's going to have to sign some guys. Now, remember when he helped the Giants go get Sean O'Hara, who became a big, big player on that Super Bowl team in 2007. In 99, when he was director of pro player personnel, he told Ernie Accorsi, go get Lomas Brown, go get Dusty Ziegler, go get Glenn Parker. They signed three free agents. All three started immediately and took the Giants to a Super Bowl. So understand, he may go out and get two free agent offensive linemen and maybe just draft one. That may be how it goes. Or it may go the other way. Maybe he signs one and gets two. I don't think he can exclusively do it through the draft, though.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it depends on how he evaluates the free agent class in the draft. That's going to determine how aggressive he is at free agency. If he's not too fond of the offensive lineman in the draft, Paul, then I could certainly see him saying, you know what, we've got to do the heavy lifting in free agency or vice versa.
Now, remember, Dave Gettleman is of the old school from the young to, of course, now more of a Gettleman tree. And he said the other day in an interview, and I can't remember if this was to us. I think it was more or less to one of the writers who did Q&A. It might have been Steve Serby.
Okay.
And he's right about this because it was George Young's philosophy also, even though Gettleman did not work under George Young. Never go into the draft saying, I must have blank. Because if you're desperate that you must have a particular position in the draft, it will alter your emotions, and it will alter your pick in the draft. You will go off your board, and you are more likely to make a mistake.
Don't reach. That's essentially what he said.
Right. So if you must have something, and I think he's made it clear the Giants must have more offensive linemen, you know what? He's going to sign at least one or two in free agency. I'm pretty sure of it.
So my question, with all that being said, too, what you said is very important, too, if it goes along with my question is, I like to dream and think about what's going to happen and speculate, but I also kind of ground myself in reality, and I know Dave Gettleman's here. I kind of see what he said he wants to do, but my question to you is, how much is the new head coach – since we don't really know who it's going to be, going to have his say in it. Does Dave Gettleman run it 75% and the coach gets 25%? Or do you guys know how that's going to work?
Well, I think you always talk to the coaching staff. And on that note, we'll let you go, Steve. Appreciate the phone call. There's always communication. I mean, in terms of giving you a percentage, in terms of, you know, Gettleman has 90% of the weight and the coaching staff only has 10, I think most GMs will tell you that they want the coaching staff to evaluate the positions that they coach on a consistent basis, Paul. I mean, I think your GM is going to probably go to the offensive line coach and he's going to be like, take a look at the offensive linemen. Tell me what you think, at least, just to get an idea of where they stand and their opinions. And you take that all into consideration as part of the evaluation process before you make the decision on draft day. So there's always that back and forth. But at the end of the day, usually the buck ends at the general manager, who is going to make the decision for the pick. But that doesn't mean he's not going to take the advice from the coaching staff.
Whoever the head coach is who sits in the chair with the New York Giants understands that the Giants have a structure here. And the general manager is the guy who's going to make that pick. Now, he may consult with the coach and say, what do you think? I'd like to have your opinion on this. But the coach is not going to have a big hammer in that draft room. That is not the way it works with this team. It's that simple.
But what I said is the consulting of back and forth in the conversation.
There'll be conversation.
That's going to happen.
There'll
Most teams
conversation.
Always do that. Yeah.
But they're going to, you know, the GM is going to have the hammer, and he's going to stay true to the board as much as he possibly can.
It's that type of discipline that leads ultimately to better chances of your picks panning out versus the other option is when you maybe listen to a coach that's so high on a guy and then you start reaching is when you get into dangerous territory. Let's head back to the line. Scott's in New Mexico. Scott, what do you got for us?
Hey guys.
How we doing, Scott?
Good. One comment and then just two questions. First is I'm a little disappointed that the Giants – looks like they're going to settle on Pat Shurmur as the head coach. He's a nice guy and so forth, but I think...
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, nothing's official, so...
Well, I'm from New Mexico, which is the chili capital of the world, and I will bet you a couple of bags of chilies against New York Strip Steak that at the end of the Minnesota season, he will be the head coach of the Giants. Anybody wants to take me up on that offer.
Okay. Well, I'm not necessarily a big fan of that food, so I'll leave that trade with somebody else. But what's your larger point here?
Okay, well, the point, I don't know if anyone's forgetting, but the Giants had one of the worst defenses this year. And that's sort of why I was leaning, hoping that Matt Patricia would be the Giant head coach. But that being said, whoever's the head coach, I think they need to address the defense as well as the offense. And I'm trying to get my head around as to why they'd be looking at quarterbacks at this point if Davis Webb is the guy, as Paul seems to think he is. And you're going to have Eli Manning if Pat Shurmur is the coach. Probably he's going to be the quarterback. Why not look to a defensive or look to defensive help, especially on the defensive line? They're going to address the offensive line, I'm sure, in the draft.
Well, free agency, first of all, is going to happen first, Scott. So, I mean, for all we know, they address that position that you're talking about. And, you know, if you go into the draft with that philosophy, what happens if the Giants front office, Dave Gettleman specifically, says there is no defensive lineman worthy of taking at number two? If that's his opinion, you still want him to take a defensive lineman?
Well, there's not necessarily a defensive lineman, but there are guys like Tremaine Edwards and Bradley Chubb, Arden Key. There's some linebackers that can really help the Giants immensely, I think.
And well, but once again, it goes back to, is it worthy, though, using the number two pick on all of those players that you mentioned? That's the bigger question.
Well, most people have said, or at least they're making the assumption, that Saquon Barkley is the best athlete in the draft and the most impactful player. The Giants, I would like to see them take him, but if they're not going to do that, and the quarterback situation, and they're still looking for quarterbacks, I have a friend of mine whose son is an NFL scout. I won't mention what team he's with, but he's evaluated all the quarterbacks that are coming out, and surprisingly, what I got sort of some inside dope is none of them are really ready to step in and be quarterback.
They're not. None of these guys are going to start this year and be effective. If they do start, it's out of necessity. They'll be force-fed, and they'll struggle like, well, never mind what they'll struggle like. But that's
and
true.
You're going to be going to a transitioning offensive line no matter who is the quarterback. He was actually very high on a quarterback that's probably not going to be taken in the early first round, but that was Lamar Jackson.
From Louisville.
He said had,
yeah.
Louisville had the most positive upside. But that being said, and then I'll take this question off the air, if Shurmur is the guy, being offensive-minded, there's going to be an evaluation process, which I assume Gettleman has already started. How did the two of them sort of interface, and how do the Giants actually, what's the process, in other words, involved in actually doing the evaluations when you've already started probably with Gettleman doing evaluations, and where would the head coach come in and starts to do that as well? How do the two of them get together and actually decide who's going to be doing what?
All right, Scott.
Thanks, guys. I'll take this.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Well, what you have to understand is during these coaching interviews, a lot of the questions that are thrown the way of the head coaches, evaluate the roster for me. What do you think of the roster? Where is this team right now? And what would you do when you come in to make tweaks to the existing roster, or what do you think needs to be brought in? That's a big part of the coaching interview, Paul. So any of those conversations already took place because they've gone through the first wave of interviews. So the GM, Dave Gettleman, who ultimately whoever he hires, he has an idea of the coach he brings in, what that coach's vision is of the current roster as it stands.
Let's put it this way. John Mara said he expects the Giants to be good in 2018. He made that very clear to us in his press briefing after Gettleman was hired. If that's the mandate, then Dave Gettleman, who also was very strong in his, without coming out and saying it, because he said, I have to see the other tapes to see if it shows me something else, I'm rolling with Eli. Well, with those two statements, you know Eli's starting, basically. At 99.9% sure, Eli Manning is starting at quarterback in 2018 for the Giants. So what it comes down to is, they're going to try their darndest to make themselves a playoff team again this season. Well, then if you draft the number two quarterback, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, because that's not forwarding that mission.
Well, the only thing I will say is Gettleman did quote, this is a quote that he had at the introductory presser, that you can never have too much of one position and substance in one position. So if you do take that into consideration, that's why I'm not necessarily just dismissing
up on offensive
the quarterback.
Linemen. How about that?
That's your wishful thinking. Let's head back to the lines. Kevin's in Florida. Kevin, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Two things. Number one, I'm in agreement with you. I think it's a virtual certainty that he'll trade the draft pick. And the reason for that is I believe what he said is he's going to fix this year what a high school coach friend of mine calls the infrastructure, the offensive line,
right,
the pass rush, all those sorts of things. And it's not like the NCAA is going to stop turning out franchise quarterbacks after the season. But let's go worst-case scenario. Let's say the Giants play 500. Eli's skills are eroding. Davis Webb is not the guy. He can go in. You know, Ryan Finley from North Carolina State and Stidham at Auburn are two guys that are going to generate a lot of buzz for next year. It's not like they're going to stop doing that. So you're going to have opportunities down the road to do that.
Well, you just may not have the opportunity to draft as high as number two, though. I think that's the counterpoint, Kevin. And if you're really high on a guy this year who at number two you think could be your future franchise quarterback, everybody's on the same page, I could understand why it'd be hard to pass that up.
Well, on the other side of the coin, though, let's say he fixes the infrastructure. Let's say the Giants are in the playoffs and get the 25th pick. Maybe next year's year he trades down if he sees a quarterback there. And he's already got the infrastructure in place. Maybe you can afford to give a few draft picks for a guy you really want.
But you know
what? I can tell you right now that the California boys are going nowhere. Darnold was not ready for Ohio State a month ago. Mm-hmm. Rosen doesn't even play in the thing, and his coach is fired at the end of the season.
We're out of time. Our producer Dave has to run. He's got to get to a meeting, so we got to shut the show down. But the one point that no one can argue against, my friend, you're right. Gettleman is going to strengthen the infrastructure. And if you don't strengthen the trenches, especially that offensive line, it doesn't matter who your quarterback is. You're not going anywhere. And that is the one indisputable point that you've just made.
And that's exactly what we talked about with the postseason teams, too. And, Kevin, appreciate the phone call. Got to let you go because, like we said, we are running up against the clock. But you got to have your house in order before you start speculating about some of the other positions. With that being said, appreciate all the phone calls. We'll try to get some tweets off the air. Thanks so much for tuning in. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow, starting at noon Eastern, as we continue to look ahead to the playoffs, the draft, as well as the coaching search. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.